And a good Tuesday morning to you, and welcome into Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Another loaded four-hour show with you. We'll head up to New York, learn a little bit more about the J-E-T-S, Jets, Jets, Jets. P-U, they stink. We'll find out more about them from Rich Cimini. He covers the Jets for ESPN. That's coming up in about 15 minutes. Scott Corley, Belmont's AD, to kick off the second hour of the broadcast. They've got some news you can use. We'll talk to Scott about that at 11 o'clock. Vince Ferrara, he got pushed back with the player interviews yesterday. Mike Vrabel was talking, so we'll talk to Vince today in the second hour as well, in the bottom of the second hour. Tim Hasselbeck to kick off the third hour. Clark Lee in the final hour, followed by Mitch Light. So a lot of things to get to. We're going to cover a lot of ground, just like they did last night in Dallas. Cowboys off to a good start. Tell you what, they look pretty darn good. I was concerned about Dak Prescott's shoulder. I think Hard Knocks tricked me, and I think he looks just fine. His knee is fine. Cowboys look good, and yet again, Peyton and Eli, that telecast is just a huge, huge hit. You know, I just think it's going to be really, really hard. I said this after week one. They still haven't done it. Maybe they're still going to do it, but I think it's going to be hard to put them on ESPN+. I just think it's too popular, and they're going to keep it right there on the deuce. Just my two cents.
No, they probably are, but the thing that sucks is they're off until week seven now. So
yeah, and you watch the reaction, by the way.
Oh yeah, it was already there.
The people are going to be outraged and be like, it's just not the same, and you know, they watch, and it's going to be like, oh, I can't believe we're taking this many weeks off. Like, people are clamoring for this. So
you know what though, I think long term that might be the best way to do this, to keep the newness, keep it fresh, because I think the longer you do it every week, it's going to be hard to keep the standard, because it is really all the rage right now. But I think if you kind of make people miss it a little bit and you bring it back on the right intervals, it'll continue to be this level for longer. That's my theory.
Yeah, I don't think I'm not buying that one.
Okay, all right. Just go ahead and blow it out. Eat your chocolate cake every day. And
I do, and I never get sick of it.
Yeah,
I can tell you that.
See?
He has his six milkshakes. And
the six
milkshakes never get sick.
Coming from the guy that had the six milkshakes, I can believe that. I think there's maybe some truth.
So you're saying maybe I
maybe you're
overindulgent things?
No, I'm just saying you might be a little different than some.
Well, all I know is the only thing I really have to add to this is, how about them Cowboys?
That was a butt kicking, really.
It was.
They look good.
The defense. They look like they knew how to play defense.
Hey, Trayvon Diggs.
These guys that they drafted, what, they used their first six picks? See, I watched the regular telecast, so I actually saw them
You learned things.
I learned some things. Their first six picks in the draft were all defensive players. It's making a difference.
Yeah,
so far,
Micah Parsons.
Like right now, if you look at the four teams, how could you not think that they're going to win this division? They're the best of the four.
Well, my thing is they beat the Chargers, and they hung with Tampa.
They played a tougher schedule. They have the better record anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I could be wrong on my prediction. I had Washington.
Giants are toast. Washington.
The Giants, you do have to say, the Giants, with a little bit of luck, could have won two of the three. I mean, they lost on a last-second field goal in two of the three games. So
and what did
like
I say after that Thursday night game? What was my comments about the Giants? They got bad body language, man. I don't like their body language. And so if you got bad body language, how are you going to win close games?
You're not.
I don't think you do. They got bad body language. Saquon Barkley, Kenny Galladay, Judge, who at times looks like a psychopath on the sidelines. I don't know. I just think they got bad body language. I'm not buying that the Giants turn this around.
Yeah. I mean,
not from what I've seen.
Dallas
doesn't look good.
Dallas has Carolina, which is – Carolina's starting off 3-0, so let's see. I think that's going to be a Carolina's first really legit matchup. So you got that, and then they play the Giants in week 5.
But what you heard a lot about Philadelphia was that Philadelphia had the best offensive line, defensive line, in the division. And Dallas was just way better on both lines of scrimmage last night. That was a big statement, I thought. So just the talent level, it really doesn't look like it's close. Now, this league can fool you, as we know. But
yeah,
it looks like Dallas is going to run away with that
division. Well, here's the biggest thing. This is along the lines of the team we cover here with the Titans. What's been the biggest glaring adjustment and improvement that you see in Dallas right now, just like the Titans, that has helped them vault to 2-1 records?
They have a defense.
Yeah, their defense is way, way better. Both defenses last year were awful, and both of them are way better. Can they keep it up? I don't know. We're about to find out.
Well, they also have the best quarterback in the division, and it's not even close. So that
Philly's
and he wasn't there last year, and they still kind of were in contention.
Yeah,
you know, by default until the last couple of weeks. So it's looking more and more like the Cowboys are they're the pick.
Yeah, but I mean, I think taking the fandom aside here, I think they're the pick of the division. But I actually think they're a pretty good team, at least appearing that way early on. We'll see. They've already dealt with some injuries. So, you know, that's going to be something to pay attention to. But, I mean, their schedule is not brutal by any means. So, you know, they play, like I said, Carolina, the Giants. They're at New England. Then they have the bye, the Vikings, the Broncos, the Falcons. They do have to go to Kansas City, which is going to be tough, obviously. But that's probably the toughest game on their schedule, Arizona. But their schedule's
looking
favorable.
At our picks before the season began. If you could buy a mulligan, like we were at a charity scramble, would you buy a mulligan with one of your picks right now, Willie, Washington to win the NFC East? No Dallas in the playoffs. Would you buy a mulligan? Would I buy one with Pittsburgh through three games in the AFC North? I have them as a wild card team getting in. My answer is, I'm thinking about it. Boy, I'll tell you, Roethlisberger looks awful. He looks like the worst quarterback in that division, and it's not even close. I've got my wallet in my hand. I'm not sure if I'm still – remember, Mike Tomlin's never had a losing season, so I'm not sure if I'm ready to fork over the cash for a mulligan yet. But, man, I'm sitting there going, how much is it again for a mulligan? What about you? You willing to buy one?
It's looking pretty strong for the Cowboys right now, but I have to stick to my guns.
So you're not buying the mulligan?
I just think in principle you have to ride and live and die with your picks.
Well, I would. I mean,
if I were to take one, it would be on the Cowboys.
You also have the Patriots in the playoffs.
I do too.
I'm okay with
I have
that.
The Colts and the Patriots both in the
Chase,
playoffs.
Yep. Yep. You got Colts and Patriots in the playoffs.
And the Chargers. I'd probably buy a mulligan on the Colts. I just don't think that's.
Colts over really over the Patriots. See, I probably I know they're in an 0-3 hole, but
their schedule's so tough, though.
Yeah, that's true.
That's a hard and as complimentary as I have been of Frank Reich, and I still like Frank Reich. If you're asking me to pick between one or the other, I'm going to trust Belichick more than I am Reich to turn this around, even though he does have a rookie quarterback.
But you've also praised Reich a lot.
I have. No, I stand by that. But an 0-3 hole with a brutal schedule with a quarterback that is maybe 65% right now.
Yeah.
And other injuries. That's asking a lot.
Oh, wait a minute. I just looked. Wait a minute. I'm now opening up my wallet. I've got Miami, too. Ooh. I think I'm going to be buying a mulligan.
You got enough?
Yeah.
I think I'm going to purchase.
How long are you allowed to?
Oh, it's a metaphor. I'm just playing along with this game. We're obviously sticking with our picks, and we'll eat it. We'll have to eat the crow.
That's the fun. I mean, that's the fun part.
But we're just having fun. But I mean, I would say if we were playing that game for real, yeah, I'd have to at least buy one and change either Pittsburgh or Miami. I mean, Miami right now, if they don't have Tua, like, they're toast.
The question is not necessarily us buying mulligans, but of the teams that have surprised us all early on, which I would say NFC West is as advertised. you know, pretty much right now. Seattle has been a little bit of a surprise, but
their schedule's been brutal too.
Yeah, yeah. I think they'll be okay in the end. I still think all four of those teams make the playoffs.
Yep.
Dallas, I had picked. Carolina's a surprise at 3-0. Let's see if they're for real as they get into the meat of their schedule, because Tampa we know is for real. New Orleans, I don't know. I don't really have a good
feel. They're hard. I mean, they're just kind of – it's kind of like Jameis Winston's career, right? Like, well, good week, bad week, good week, bad week. It's what it feels like.
Atlanta sucks, but congrats to Arthur Smith on his first win.
somebody had to win that game.
The AFC South, as long as the Titans don't screw it up, I mean, that should be their division to win. The AFC East, Buffalo right now looks to be it. The West is the surprising one. Are the Raiders for real? Are the Broncos for real? You know, which one do you buy over the other? We said it yesterday. Kansas City's going to get this turned around. Kansas City at 1-2, last in the division, is take a picture because it's not going to last very long.
Yeah, there's no way I'm spending money on buying a mulligan on a Kansas City.
No, Kansas City's going to get that figured out, and they're going to win that division. I think that's going to even itself out before it's all said and done. The AFC North, I still buy Cleveland. I've been saying Cincinnati was going to be better. I still think it's going to even out. They're not going to make the playoffs, but they're 2-1 right now. They're leading the division.
Yep. At Preds0935 tweets at the game and says, "Hey, Darren, you forgot to mention the outstanding tight end for the Giants, Caden Smith. He's a definite plus." Yeah, I really wasn't. That wasn't directed toward Caden Smith. It was directed toward the horrible body language of Saquon Barkley, their wide receiver Kenny Golladay, and their head coach Joe Judge. Is that it?
Yeah.
Clark Judge.
Joe Judge. I had to think about that for a minute. Who's their head coach?
Judge who?
Judge Judy.
Judge Judy. Judge Wapner. That's the body language. There's just a bad aura around them, and it's not directed towards Caden Smith. I can tell you that. So thank you for the tweet. We'll come back. Let's learn a little bit more about this Jets team. Are they ready to talk about the number one pick? Are they throwing in the towel on the season? Is it, you know, oh my gosh, Sam Darnold is 3-0. What is the mood up in New York as the Titans set to go up there to take on a winless Jets team? We'll talk to Rich Cimini on the other side as you listen to Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase on this beautiful Tuesday morning, probably mid-80s today here in Nashville. Our show is presented by Curation CBD. Curation CBD products curated for life. Let's go to our phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Rich Cimini covers the Jets for ESPN, and he is on the line with us. The Titans head up to New York to take on the winless Jets. Rich, good morning. How you doing?
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for doing this. I want to start with something I said in the last segment that I was going to go there with you. What is the mood up there, especially with the success of Sam Darnold in Carolina, at least the start early on for the Panthers? Is that what people are talking about, or are people talking about how Zach Wilson has looked like? What is the storyline to this point up in your market?
Well, I mean, it's hard to get a true pulse of the, you know, people, but, you know, just from reading some social media reaction, yeah, the Darnold situation in Carolina is very much in the narrative here. I mean, I think Sam and Zach Wilson are going to be linked for the rest of their careers from a perspective of your average Jets fan. I mean, that was a monumental franchise decision for the Jets to move on from Sam Darnold and then draft Zach Wilson. So Sam's 3-0. I think fans, the frustration is definitely building. I think the patience is wearing thin after three games. Zach Wilson has not played well. Sam has looked pretty good in Carolina. So absolutely, that is part of what fans are talking about now.
It's unfair, and, you know, we don't judge rookie quarterbacks by three games, but it was a tough weekend for the rookie quarterbacks in the first round this past weekend. Like, overall right now, what you've seen through the development camps, training camp, preseason, and now through three games, what is something or two that you like about what you've seen out of Zach Wilson, and what's something that maybe concerned you early on?
Well, I think he's obviously got the physical talent. I mean, his arm is really good. He can make throws, you know, that a lot of quarterbacks can't. He's just got a strong arm and a very quick release, and he's able to make throws at odd angles, you know, off-balance type plays. He's more athletic than people think. He can move around pretty well in the pocket, escape some pressure. I think those are the positives. The negatives are that, you know, he's not – he doesn't know where to throw the ball, and he doesn't know when to throw the ball. You know, he's holding the ball too long right now. He's not in rhythm with the offense. I don't know if he's not trusting his reads or he's not trusting the receiver's routes, but it's not in rhythm. He's like a beat too late, and it's resulting in some turnovers. And, you know, this is going to happen. I mean, he played at BYU. They played a ridiculously soft schedule last year, and so they put him in as a day one starter. There was no competition. Was no semblance of competition. They handed him the job, and he's going to go through growing pains. It's just a fact. And the team around him, I thought they'd be a little better around him, but they have not. They have disappointed as well.
Yeah, and I guess one of those disappointments has to be the running game or lack of, right, Rich? I mean, they have been able to get nothing going on the ground so far.
Yeah, in two of the three games, they've had nothing. They ran the ball pretty well against New England, actually, in week two. They had 150 yards. But on Sunday in Denver, it was zilch. You know, there was no running game. I think they got away from it too early. They only had, I think they ran 53 plays total, and I think only 12 runs.
Mm.
So, I mean, I know the score was one-sided. You know, in the second half, they had to do some throwing, but that is a ridiculously lopsided run-pass ratio when you have a rookie quarterback. You have to do everything you can to get a running game going, and I thought they bailed on it too soon, which did no favors for Zach Wilson.
Yeah, and a guy that we got to know very well here in Nashville. Of course, he was a first-round pick by the Titans, a fifth pick overall, wide receiver Corey Davis. It looks like early on there's chemistry between Wilson and Davis because it looks like that's kind of his go-to guy. Is that fair to say?
Pretty much his only go-to guy right now, I think. I mean, they definitely had, in the first week, you know, you saw two touchdowns for them in Carolina in the second half as the Jets were trying to come back in that game. But Corey's last two games have not been good. He was completely shut down by New England in week two. He was barely targeted. He had very, very poor production in that game. And in this past week, he had two drop passes. And so, you know, so he's been somewhat of a disappointment the last couple of games. But you're right, he's the go-to guy. The problem is they don't really have a good number two option, and so it's making things a little tougher on Corey Davis.
Talking to Rich Cimini, covering the New York Jets, and that is the opponent for the Titans coming up in week four. And Rich, it certainly, as we were saying, it would help the rookie quarterback if you could get a pretty good running game. They've also got a rookie running back in Michael Carter. What about his progress, and if they could set things up around him well, could he be a good tailback going forward long term?
Yeah, he actually started in Denver, and he pretty much split the workload with Ty Johnson. I think that's probably the way they'll go the rest of the year. I think it'll be a pretty even split between those two. So I think, you know, Carter is he's small. Clearly, you know, he's only 5'8". He's about 205. He runs hard. He does break tackles. He's not just a little scat back. He does have he's a physical runner. He's got good vision. He's got good change of direction. I think he's a pretty good player. I just don't think they're ever going to go to a quote-unquote feature back. I think they're going to stick with their committee system and run guys in and out based on who has the hot hand. It's really incumbent upon the offensive line to play better. Their run blocking against Denver was god-awful. You know, I mean, they were just the guys were getting hit in the backfield. They had six runs for negative yardage, so it was just terrible. And so they're going to have to block better for Carter to have a chance.
When you're going through the process the Jets are going through right now, and you've got a new coach and a new staff, I know you're trying to lay that foundation. What signs are you seeing? We know what they want to do with the rookie quarterback, with a lot of young players, with bringing in a guy like Corey Davis, but what kind of foundation are you seeing under this new coaching staff?
So many new players, as you mentioned. I think, you know, they have, depending on the week, they have anywhere from 6 to 8 rookies, you know, playing prominent roles in offense, defense, special teams. So they were leading the league in rookie snaps going into week three. I'm sure they're still leading the league. And so you're going to go through those ups and downs. Young cornerbacks, their corners are very, very young. They're rookies and second-year players. And they're going to make mistakes as well. The linebackers, except for C.J. Mosley, are young. And so you're going to see mistakes. And then on offense, we just touched on some of their players who are rookies. Elijah Moore, who won't play this week because of a concussion, he is playing a lot as a rookie. You know, starting as a rookie, their left guard, Elijah Vera Tucker at a USC, has been a day one starter. So he's had some ups and downs. So this is all about rebuilding for the Jets this year. I don't think anybody, I personally picked them to go 5-12 this year. I'll stick with that. Although after days like Sunday, you're kind of looking down the schedule thinking, how are they going to get to 5? But, you know, I think Jet fans, for the most part, understand what they're going through. But I think when they see games like Sunday in Denver, they're like, where's the progress? You know, that was a regression. That was a step back. And so there's going to be stops and starts like that all year because of this is who they are.
You led me right into the next question because, Rich, you know as well as anybody, in New York, it's really hard sometimes to sell a big rebuild where you trade a Jamal Adams or your starting quarterback to get draft picks that may not help you immediately, and you might have to take that step back, even though the team has been struggling. If you look around all the franchises in New York, I'm a big Mets fan. You know, sometimes fans get really impatient, right, in a big market like that. So how can they make that work?
It's a great point, and I am a Mets fan too, so I feel that we've sympathized.
Sorry about the last 6 weeks or so. It hadn't been easy, huh?
No, not at all. And of course, the Mets came into the season with expectations. This is not a rebuilding team. And you're right. I think in New York, there is, you know, there's really not a tolerance for rebuilding. And I think in the past, the Jets have fallen into that trap. I mean, in 2016, you know, they had a bad year in 16. And then in 2017, they basically stripped the roster down. And we were all writing how they were tanking for the number one pick. And, you know, it was a rebuild, but then they got away from it. You know, like the rebuild, all of a sudden they started signing veterans like Tremaine Johnson, who was terrible, and then Le'Veon Bell, who was terrible. And then they drafted the quarterback. You know, they thought, you know, they had Sam Darnold, so that was part of the puzzle. But so they tried to do, they, you know, wanted their cake and eat it too, you know, and so that was the previous regime. So this regime comes in with Saleh and Douglas, and they're basically stripping it down again. But I think there's going to be more of a commitment to it this time. I don't think they're going to deviate from their plan like previous administrations did. So we'll see. There's going to be a lot of pain along the way. The Jets have not been shy about admitting that. You know, they've talked pretty transparently about what they're trying to do. And so it's just a matter of getting the right pieces in place.
Rich Cimini is with us, covers the Jets for ESPN. These guys know I had a huge man crush on Elijah Moore coming out of Ole Miss. I wanted the Titans to take him so bad and was very disappointed when they didn't, but I still think he's going to be something in this league. Do you view his first three games as a disappointment, or is just a rookie that is on a bad team and he's just working his way into the NFL?
Yeah, he's been a disappointment so far. I mean, in Carolina, he dropped a long pass that it probably would have changed the complexion of the game early on. And so we have not seen the real Elijah Moore yet. I watched him every day in OTAs and training camp. He is a really good player. I think he has a chance to be special in this league. I thought that was a good pick. The Jets were like doing cartwheels in the draft room when he fell to 34. I mean, they absolutely thought Tennessee or a team in the bottom third of the first round would take him. And so they were thrilled to have him. I think I don't know if they're using him correctly. He's been predominantly an outside receiver. I think at Ole Miss, he got a lot of his production from the slot. And so, but they're jammed up with slot receivers, so they've been using him outside. I don't know if that's his future in the league, but so yeah, it's been a slow start for him. Like I said, he won't play this week. He's got a concussion, but I still think he's got a very, very bright future.
When talking about coaches and Robert Saleh, as you were mentioning, Mike LaFleur, the offensive coordinator, I know, again, still early, still a lot of things to develop, but are you seeing some signs that, you know, he's going to be the right fit to try and build this offense around Wilson?
You know, he is very much like Wilson in that he's a rookie. Mike, of course, comes from a really good football family. His brother, you know, the coach of the Packers. Mike's been around the game. His dad was a college coach. I mean, so he grew up in the game. He's worked with really good people like Kyle Shanahan. So he's, you know, of course, his brother. So he's been around good offense. The Jets are not a good offense right now. They have 20 points in three games. That is tied for a franchise low through three games. You have to go back to 1976 when Joe Namath was on his last legs and Lou Holtz,
oh,
Jets
man.
Coach. They scored 20 points through the first three games, and they've had some very, very bad offenses since then, but right now they're at a historic low. So I like Mike. I think he's got a future, but he's struggling right now, just like Zach Wilson. I thought the game on Denver was a head-scratcher. Like I mentioned earlier, they got away from the run too soon. I don't think they put Zach Wilson in positions to succeed. So he's got to get better as well, meaning Mike LaFleur.
Well, Rich, we're going to be talking about this for the next several days and see how it all shakes out on Sunday, but appreciate the time today.
You're welcome. Have a good one.
Rich Cimini covers the Jets for ESPN. The Titans' next opponent coming up on Sundays. We'll be hitting that all week.
Remember, 1976, Lou Holtz did not make it through the entire season. Bailed and then went to Arkansas and rekindled himself as a great college coach.
Yeah. Yeah, well, listen.
20 points in the first three games.
That's what NFL coaches do. They bail and go to Arkansas.
Well, I guess, yeah, that theme has been repeated, hasn't it? Yeah, history has repeated.
Certainly happened. You know, now will another prominent college coach that's currently in the NFL bail after 1 year?
You have asked that question, I believe.
I can tell you this. The first week he had, like, touch of gray in his hair, and now after losing three straight, I mean, it's all gray. Like,
it's all gray, so he needs the Keith Hernandez,
yes.
Clyde Frazier, Just for Men
yes.
commercial.
Yes.
No play for Mr. Gray.
Just keep in mind, he is dedicated to turning that organization around.
He said there was zero chance. You should take
Urban Meyer at his word.
I believe every word that comes out of that man's mouth.
You should.
He is honest and just an upstanding individual.
No doubt.
So, yeah. That's how I feel about that.
If you're just new to the show, that was just a hot pile of garbage you disturbed.
#sarcasm.
Anybody who has listened to the show, they know we were kidding. All right, we'll come back. We'll discuss that a little bit more on this. Interesting things there about the Jets, the next opponent for the Titans. Got to be careful with this where, you know, so many times when everybody's feeling good, it's like, oh, okay, well, you can just send up the practice squad and beat the Jets. That's not how it works in the NFL. We'll discuss on the other side as you listen to the DDC here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Don't forget you can join us. So we've partnered with the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society's Light the Night. Light the Night brings light to darkness of cancer through hope, research, and support for patients and families. That means a lot to this show, and I know it means a lot to you out there. Through this inspirational nationwide movement, we want to raise awareness and funding for groundbreaking research and treatment for options to eliminate cancer. Nashville's Light the Night will be virtual and take place on November 4th. You can learn more at lightthenight.org/TN. All right, good conversation there with Rich Cimini, who covers the Jets for ESPN. Scott Corley, Belmont's AD. They have made a big announcement. We'll tell you about in about 25 minutes. Also, Vince Ferrara in the second hour of the program as the Vols head to Missouri to take on the Tigers. So we'll get into all that and react to what he saw in the Florida game. So this is one of those games where you have to be careful. We see it all the time in the NFL, right? Where you go, oh, well, that's why it's so hard. That's why BetMGM, as we talked about on that day at First Horizon Park on that Wednesday show, was willing to pay out $736,000 on a $25 16-team NFL parlay. It's hard. Just picking the winner. Forget the spread. Think about it. That person just did money line. You just pick the winner, and they were willing to. It paid out $736,000 if you did it 16 times right. Just picking a winner. That's how hard the NFL is off a $25 bet. So you have to be careful. You have to be careful going, oh, Now, should the Titans go up there and take care of business? Well, of course. Would we all be stunned if they lost? Yes, of course. But let's not act like this is going to – every game in the NFL is not going to be 36-3, right? I mean, I get it. The Bills are like a 17-point favorite over Houston because right now the Bills are dismantling teams the last 2 weeks. But I suspect, guys, this is not going to be easy. I know it should be easy, and we all think that they should go up there and just march right through the Jets and hurry up and get on the plane and come back to Nashville, and they're 3-1. And they probably will be 3-1 afterwards. But I just don't think it's going to be that easy. Do you agree or disagree?
I always like to say, take a look at the spread. The spread is not 21.
7.5.
7.5. So you just heard Rich Cimini describe where the Jets are. They were a mess before, and they have gone even younger and more of a rebuild, even taking a step back to take the steps forward that they need because they have tried to rebuild quickly and failed many times. And at the same time, it's about a touchdown game. Think about that in terms of a comparison to when a supposed contender meets a rebuilding team in college. You see spreads 4 or 5 touchdowns. This is the NFL, and the talent difference, even between the best and the worst, isn't even close to that. And we see, I think you guys said it the other day, the Texans are a big-time mess, and they're only like a 14-point underdog. But still, that's way more than 7.5. So the odds makers, they're not saying here, hey, the Titans are some juggernaut that are just going to go up there and just destroy the Jets, even though we're all sitting here going, boy, you should win this game.
Well, and they should win this game, but I think they're factoring in. You know, A.J. Brown is week to week with the hamstring, what's being called a hamstring strain. Nobody knows what's going on with Julio Jones, what tight means, and why he was kept out of the fourth quarter. And
I'm glad you brought that up, Chase. You want to know what happened to me since we last spoke on the air?
Are you tight? We need to hold.
Yes, every
day. Do we need to hold you out for the fourth quarter of the show?
Every day I deal with tightness. My phone may have rang once or twice.
You heard from some people, didn't
and
you?
And imagine that from an area code down
from
in Georgia.
The 404?
And without you guys knowing the conversation, what do you think the first words? There were two phone calls, to be exact. What do you think the first words? Almost identical. It's like they were standing next to each other.
I think they were three words, or four words.
Yes.
I told you so.
Yep. Those were the exact. It was the same phone call, just two different numbers. I don't want to say it, but I'm going to. And I was like, I know. Go ahead. I told you so. I was like, yep. He's like, get ready. This is what you guys are going to deal with, and this is what Mike Vrabel was trying to avoid yesterday at the press conference.
Yep.
Because there's no way, as I said yesterday, you can convince me that Mike Vrabel's like, this game's in the bag. Yeah, we'll worry about it. We'll save Julio. No, that's the game was not in the bag. That's not whatever's going on. And I'm not saying that there's something between those two. I'm saying this is what we've been talking about. And for the listener yesterday that texted in and says, I don't buy this stuff, that's fine. That's okay. This is a conspiracy. Why are you guys out to get Julio? Well, we're not out to get Julio. Well, we were pro Julio to come here. But, you know, you do have to listen to people that covered him his entire career in the NFL before getting here, and especially people that you trust. In my case, I trust these people. They know what they're talking about. And if they're like, buyer beware, this is the stuff he was doing the last couple of years in Atlanta, you have to at least take that into consideration, because we would say everything that has been told to us. By the way, what was the reaction? Let's backtrack for just a minute. What was the reaction whenever the Titans acquired Vic Beasley last year? We went down to Atlanta, talked to the same friends of the show. What did they all say?
I don't know about that one. What are you doing?
You guys are
doesn't
excited
seem like he
about
loves football.
Vic Beasley, but yeah, I don't know if you guys are going to love that one at all. 9.5 minutes. Yeah, no, I'm sorry. I can't paint a rosy picture on that one. Well, you know, you have to at least consider it, and we all know how that played out. the stuff that was being said about Julio doesn't like to practice, checks out of games, not going to be around much. We'd have to say to this point, there's a little bit of that factoring in, isn't it? Mm-hmm. I'm not willing to go, it's like all been that way. I mean, I get it. Before Sunday, he had played a pretty significant amount of snaps. Is that fair to say through the first 2 weeks?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think if you extrapolate out these three games.
Good word.
Yes.
I think you would take.
Strong.
I think you would take this, especially if your mindset is, let's make sure we have him down the stretch. And then, knock on wood, theoretically, into a postseason. It's a long season. You've got 17 weeks now, not 16. He's 32. I think some smarts in terms of when to push it and when not is the right mindset with him, especially because Nick Westbrook Akina is a good player. That's one thing that's been a revelation here. The opportunities that have been there for him, he's doing the job.
Yeah,
so a combination of the two is good. Julio Jones does not have to catch 100 passes for them to get to the playoffs.
Right, but you want him out there in the fourth quarter.
Something happened on Sunday. I don't think there's any way around it. There should have been an Joe Rextro pointed this out. There should have been an injury report. Hmm. Like, why is Julio Jones out? In the press box, they usually announce, and on the telecast, he's out, tightness in whatever, questionable return. They didn't do that, so there was definitely some stuff going on there. And I believe that this is going to come up more than once this year. But I think the goal is have him ready to go when the big, big games start happening down the stretch and into the playoffs. That's when it's most important. They might be good enough offensively for them to do it this way, where he plays some, shares time, the other guys are doing the job, and you win enough games to win this division.
Yeah, but
how's that worked out for Ryan Johansson since he's been with the Predators? Has it that always been? You know, it's like, why can't he do? Okay, great, he's turning on in the playoffs or down the stretch. Well, why can't he do it for the entire season, right? So you think that people are going to lay off Julio Jones?
If the team's winning. If they're winning,
well,
that's the answer.
The Predators were winning. Did that stop people from saying that about Ryan Johansson? That narrative? No. They were going to the playoffs every year. They were doing just fine, and people still were like, why can't he do it all year? Why can't he do it for 82? Why can't that Ryan Johansson do it for 82 games? That, right? I'm not making this up. I mean, we've seen all the feedback and heard all the feedback. That's what people have been saying this for years. Why would it be any different for Julio Jones?
And if you're just looking simply at the numbers through three games, 12 receptions, 204 yards, okay. It's not bad.
Nope.
You take that. But is this going to continue to be a thing? And I'm sure everybody that you talked to yesterday, Darren, is saying this is a thing. You're going to deal with this. It's going to continue to be a thing. It's not going to go away. Vrabel can use whatever verbiage he wants with he got tied, or, you know, he made a decision and yada, yada, yada. There's more to it. And so my concern is whether something happened or not, the fact that he wasn't available in the fourth quarter is concerning, because if A.J. Brown is not there, you want to be able to say, okay, well, Julio is there. I am going to be watching for the injury report tomorrow to see if Julio's on it.
Naturally. Everybody will. It's a big concern. But I'm just saying,
what will it
that
say?
You have
tightness?
To so,
what,
yeah,
what,
he's tight. What's tight? Tight.
I have no idea
he's
what they're going to do. They know. Mike Vrabel knows something. He knows what happened, and he tried his best to minimize what he knew was going to be a big thing and will continue to be a big thing.
But he makes it a bigger thing by tiptoeing around.
I don't know. I think it's a big thing no matter what he says. Because the fact is, he had his helmet on. He wasn't reported unless they just made up an injury. That could have been what they did at the time. He's out. He can't play. But they made it sound like he could have come in an emergency or something. We don't know what was going on behind the scenes. Regardless, it's what everybody's going to be talking about. No matter what he said, everybody's going to be talking about it because it's Julio Jones and because of the past. Because of what we have learned of what did happen in Atlanta. There's no way to avoid this being a topic on a team that's a good team, that's trying to win a Super Bowl, that has high expectations. You cannot avoid it being discussed. That's what Mike Vrabel has to start with, how he strategizes talking about it. It's going to be a thing every week, I think. But as long as they're winning, and as long as Nick Westbrook-Ikhina continues to be a good player, it's not a big problem right now.
By the way, they beat the Colts. It's a huge win for them to put them 0-3. It's a division win, and that's what people have been talking about for 2 days. So did the winning calm that down? I don't think the winning is taking care of the Julio Jones.
What are we talking about right now? What have we been talking about for 2 days?
But it would be times two if they were 1-2 right now, not 2-1. Had they lost that game on Sunday, it'd be a whole nother level, and you know it.
I would
agree. Yeah, you're not wrong there.
The fact is, Westbrook-Ikhina has been very efficient. He's catching everything. He had the one fumble, which screwed everything up.
Not one game.
He had a very good first game.
I'm not willing to go as far as you are with him.
He was targeted. He was targeted twice. One reception for 10 yards against Arizona,
and a touchdown, which was a touchdown.
No, it wasn't.
Against Arizona,
he got one touchdown. Okay, he got to the 1 yard line. He got a big first down on a third down. He's a good player.
He's a very good player.
I've been impressed.
He has 171 yards in his career and one touchdown.
Well, he can't help anything that happened before this year.
He's getting
a chance to play. He's a good player.
So
he's going to be an important player going forward. He's going to be a very important player going forward with AJ Brown out for a while, because it doesn't look like Josh Reynolds is doing himself any favors. It really looks like this kid is now going to be a major part of the game plan for the next several weeks.
I don't know how you can go there when we've seen this before. We've seen all these guys we've talked about on the show have the Cam Batson, Nick Williams. We can go down the list of all these guys that emerge for a couple weeks, and that's it. Khalif Raymond. I mean, you can't do that for 17 weeks. I'm not willing to say. I hope you're right. By the way, I hope he catches more touchdowns. I like the Billy White Shoes Johnson. I hope that's his new touchdown dance. If he catches touchdowns, more touchdowns, I like that. But the guy has like three catches. I'm not willing to oh my gosh, this is going to be a guy that they're going to be using the rest of the season, because we've seen this before. We've seen a guy emerge, have a couple really good games, and everybody gets really excited, and then they kind of disappear. They're not in the plans.
Is he a flash in the pan, or is he somebody that can be a contributor? I don't know that. I can't give you a definitive answer, because like he said, I've seen him have one good game. That was the best game of his very, very short career. I know they're high on him. He's obviously – he made the team. He's stuck around. He appeared at times last year. He had a very good camp, which led to him making the team. Those are all positive things. But now it's the big time. And if you take away Julio Jones, you take away A.J. Brown, you put him in more of a prominent role, can he do it or can he not?
We're going to find out. But if you thought that you were just going to line up A.J. Brown and Julio Jones every game for 17 games, that would not have been a very good plan. They had to be thinking about this, and it has happened early, and it is going to be an issue all year, I believe. But there's got to be some maintenance. There's got to be some thought that we have to be able to win games and get to this tournament, because to beat the big teams, we've got to have A.J. Brown and Julio Jones healthy. They can't play at 75% every week and get to where they want to go. So that's where the only way you find out if a guy can get it done is if he gets in there and plays. Like Derek Mason, they had Yancey Thigpen. And because Yancey Thigpen kept getting hurt and he could never stay out there, that allowed a Derek Mason to get in there. And then they figured out, you know what? Derek Mason's way better than Yancey Thigpen.
You knew more of what you had.
He was a draft pick. He was a fourth-round draft pick. This guy's undrafted.
He was a draft pick, and you knew what you had in a special teams player. Yeah. And so the thought
not the first
was,
year.
In 99?
His first year was 98.
I think his first year was 97.
Yeah. So he was there. He had been on the roster for years.
But he stuck around. He kept making the team because of his special teams ability. And so then, he's the next man up, because it wasn't just Yang. I think Chris had gotten hurt. I mean, they had a ton of injuries. Dyson got hurt, and so they had to go to Derek. But they knew he had been there. He was in the system. He and Heimerdinger gelled from the get-go, and it all came together. But he had been around. This guy has been here 2 years. He's an undrafted guy. You're sitting here saying he's good. I have no idea. Maybe he is.
They've been.
I hope you're right.
They've been talking about this guy. You're now comparing him to Derek Mason. I mean, this is quite a leap for you to go head first into the pool without checking for water. I mean, I suspected that would be me or Chase that would do that, not you, Coach.
See, so there you go with your hyperbole. I didn't say he's the next Derek Mason. I said that there are – you were talking about all these cases where there are flashes in the pan. I'm talking about there are cases as well, like Derek, where a guy just needs to get a chance to play, and then you find out the guy can play.
Well, yeah, but haven't we found out that Mike Vrabel, it's Nick Westbrook, Akini 1 week, and then if A.J. Brown is still out and Julio Jones is still tight, then the next week it could be Chester Rogers.
Chester Rogers is going to play the same role.
Week 8, it's Racy McMath was out there on Sunday.
I do not think that they want to play.
Then it's Cameron Batson.
I think Westbrook Akina is way ahead of Racy McMath.
What have you seen that is given you this, all of a sudden he's the third – he is going to be their third option?
It's the way they've used him. Every time that Julio Jones comes out, it's him that comes in. Chester Rogers has been the slot guy that has basically won the job that Josh Reynolds was supposed to win. That's how they're using the three wide receiver sets. And so now that A.J. Brown is out, that's what I'm curious about, is how do they game plan this week? If they have Westbrook, Akina, and Jones, can they – Does Westbrook Akina know that position that A.J. Brown is playing? That's the next step, with him probably being out for the next few games, is who do they put there? Because they had to use McMath. Or is this the opening that Josh Reynolds needs to actually get back in the plan here? If he doesn't get back in the plan this week, then it ain't going to happen, I don't think, for him. Then that means he's really in the doghouse or has some health concern that we don't know about, because – you know, they needed the special teams guys. Reynolds does not play special teams. And so that's where Rogers and Batson, like Batson got a lot of the reps when A.J. went out.
Yeah.
Right? Batson went in there and took that. Now, Batson, he's limited in what he's going to be able to do. Can he get down the field and maybe catch a pass or two? Yeah, but I see Westbrook Akina as a guy that he's got the build to be able to do what they need in this offense. And that's, you know, with the catch radius and be able to catch those intermediate routes.
Sure.
To set things up for the running game, which is how they're going to have to win.
Look, I hope you're right, Willie. I do. I think he's a great story. I think Chase and I are on the same page. Like, I'm just not ready to go there. I don't think I'm seeing exactly what you're seeing. And like I said, I hope you're right. I think he's a great story. We'll need to see. I need to see some more. Like, let's see it again, and then maybe another time, and then I'll see if I can get to where you are. But maybe you're just ahead of us on Nick Westbrook Akini. I'm just not willing to. When you just think about Mike Vrabel since his time here, it's hard to figure out who they really like, because they bounce around a lot, and that's actually turned out to be a strength of theirs. They're not afraid. I mean, who would have ever raise your hand if you thought Racy McMath would be in there last week?
Not me.
It was the last resort.
If you thought you would see Racy McMath Sunday against the
Colts. There's a guy on the practice squad that I think will be in this Sunday.
If you told me that Brown and Jones would be unavailable in the fourth quarter, I would have said, well, yeah, they got to have Racy. Somebody's got to go and stand on the field and be the fourth guy. No. that's why you have.
But he had a good camp. They like him. I mean,
he's really in there for special teams.
Yeah, but he did. You know, you have to, even though you're a special teams guy and that's going to be your primary role, you have to do enough in the offense to give them confidence to say, okay, well, if we got to put you in there, we'll put you in there.
All right, we'll come back. We will start the second hour by telling you some news about the Belmont Bruins. But first, Willie. Preseason is underway. Predators have already had a double dip down in Sunrise, and they're going to be home on Saturday, and you're going to tell everybody about the Preds.
The Predators are underway in the training camp. It's exciting, and they want you to know that the season ticket sales are important right now. They want you back in the flow. 82 games, 6 October home games, 6 home games in March. Remember, there's the Olympic break. So it's really going to compress the schedule. There's a lot of great dates you can jump in on, especially early in the season. And we want you to explore all the ways you can come on down to Smashville and enjoy this season coming up. A lot of good young players coming up through the system. A lot of the superstars like Roman Josi still there. And it's going to be fun. It is a wide open Central Division when you get down right to it. So we want you down there. Remember, Ticketmaster.com for the single game tickets. Those are out there. But the best deals are always for those who join the Loyal Legion in some form, whether it be a partial or full season ticket plan. They will work with you on what is available to you and what the right price range is for you, and you get the best deals and so many great benefits when you're part of the season ticket plan. So go to NashvillePredators.com/tickets to get all the info, and we will see you. And let me add this, as I always do. Remember the outdoor game this year, the Stadium Series, February 26th against the two-time defending champion Tampa Bay Lightning. That's one that you're going to circle on your calendar. Everybody wants to be at that game, and the best way to guarantee that you get your seats is by being a member of the Loyal Legion. NashvillePredators.com/tickets. We'll see you down in Smashville.